Hi, this is Jeff D., the host of the Nonprofits Atheist Podcast. The Nonprofits is made possible by volunteers and the generous support of listeners like you. If the promotion of positive atheist culture and the separation of church and state are values you hold dear, please consider contributing by becoming an ACA member or visiting our product page at evolvefish.com under the Partner tab. Thank you.
And we are the Nonprofits. We are your glorious leaders. Jeff D., Dennis LeBay, and our special guest glorious leader, Manda. We decree this day, the 1st of February, 2017, to be Divine Atheism Day, and that the Austin Freethought Library be a holy place from which we will come to you live forevermore. As pilgrims to this holiest of shrines, you will join your glorious leaders in basking in the heavenly light of the atheist community of Austin, once a nonprofit educational organization for the promotion of positive atheism and the separation of church and state, now the Alpha and Omega, the Most High, answerable to no one. You yourself may share in its ultimate wisdom by calling its voicemail at 512-220-6561 or visiting their website at www.atheist-community.org. And these blessed days of communion with the nonprofits continue every first and third Wednesday of each and every month from 7:30 to 9 Central Time. In fact, you too may join other acolytes in the ecstasy of our magnificent chat room by following the edicts at www.nonprofitsradio.com. So get on your knees, brothers and sisters, close your eyes and raise your hands in supplication to the Nonprofits.
I'm so torn.
There you go.
Whether I should just let that slide or explain for those few listeners who might not have understood that he was joking.
I know. This is not the Onion.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back. This is only our second episode of the week, having missed one missed one last month due to renovations here in the studio. Sorry about that, everyone. But we're back minus Russell, and in his stead, as he's off traveling, we have the lovely and educated Manda.
Amen.
Welcome, Manda.
Hello.
This was a really hard show for me to prep for. I mean, harder than the last one because of it, you know, what's happening in
the, yes,
the, I would say the world, events. But I mean the United
current
States
events. Yes.
Yeah. It's hard as you know, and with us being,
nonprofit and all.
We're the mouthpiece of a nonprofit organization that can't take politically partisan stances on things.
Right.
And that's it's hard. It's just hard very to not. So yeah. that's
so
half,
we'll endeavor to not.
That's half us venting and half us apologizing to you, the listeners who probably want to hear that kind of thing.
But. Yes.
We're not gonna. Right? We're gonna touch on a bunch of issues, but we're not gonna.
Yes, if you hear a pregnant
we're
pause,
not gonna
feel free to fill it in with your imagination.
So how's everybody been since the last time we were on? Manda, you were on pretty recently, right? Like a month ago,
a month or two.
In fact, you were on one of the episodes where we had a long discussion about. Should, if you recall, weren't you
that's
on that?
Right.
I was.
Yeah, we have a response from one of them.
Yeah.
one of our listeners on that topic. I don't want to spend a lot of time on it because that's we beat that subject to death.
And I find myself doing a set of cardboard heroes.
Oh, yes?
Yes, which is strange because pretty much that's the thing I did in my earliest part of my career. So my career's come full circle.
So for those listeners of ours who are not tabletop role-playing gamers and might not know, cardboard heroes are a alternative to metal or plastic miniatures on the tabletop. They're like printed little A-frame folded things that have art of the front and the back of a character on them, right?
Right. I'm doing the art.
Fronts and backs. And Dennis did some the very, very earliest ones. From a company here in Austin.
But these will be downloadable in PDF form.
I'm sure they will.
That makes them kind of immortal.
As well as probably you can buy them as physical objects as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, pewter minis, a lot of folks don't know it, only last about a couple thousand reproductions. They have to make new molds from masters, and the masters eventually give out and the molds give out. So just about every pewter mini out there is limited edition art.
Yeah.
Just because of the way they make it. But
It's kind of interesting. The first cardboard heroes, the printing was your standard, you know, four color, I guess, dot matrix, not computer printing.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It was.
And so there were registration issues and things.
Right. There's photo registration issues and the dots were large in comparison to the size of the figures, which is extremely small.
Ooh.
And so it was like, you'd fill in details with your imagination. But those are details that I actually had in the art that didn't survive the printing. But now they'll be printing these things out. You'll be printing them out on your desktop printer or getting them from the company printed up, and I'm sure it'll be all computer printed and be really crisp and sharp. Mm-hmm. And we'll see how that goes.
Cool. How much time do you expect to spend on these things?
Oh, I'm probably going to be working. There's about 50 characters going to be working.
Are these
on them
for a
about,
particular?
It's for a particular adventure. So some of the characters are very specific. Yeah.
So the adventure will come with its own set of cardboard heroes. So that's interesting. Is it a GURPS thing?
Yeah.
That is the acronym of the title of a role-playing game system from that company.
Yeah.
And Amanda, you want to talk about what you've been doing since last we spoke with you on the show?
Oh, I was sick as a proverbial dog. Oof. First I had a flu, then I had a lung infection, then I was coughing and coughing and coughing and drinking lots of tea. Uh-huh. It's amazing what a spoonful of honey will do. Something about it seems to whack that coughing reflex on the head.
Huh.
You wouldn't think, but
yeah.
That's why cough syrups are kind of syrupy.
I've never heard a bee cough.
Good point.
Huh. I'm still hammering on the manuscript to the third edition of Villains of Vigilantes called Mighty Protectors, which my best buddy and I from high school in 1979 originally wrote, and we got the rights back, and we're doing a new thing, and I'm late, but we can see the end.
It's looking good
of the writing part, and then Jack has written all of these comic strips. It's a superhero role playing game, right? And in the previous editions, there have always been little, in lieu of illustrations, there have sometimes been Sunday funnies style.
Huh.
Comic strips of superheroes doing things, and he's written like a dozen scripts for this one. So it might be illustrated entirely with little stories, which would be kind of cool.
That's kind of neat.
But that's the next thing I'd jump into. I won't ask if we're going to start with news because when we don't really have any other than what I brought,
right?
Or if we're going to start with listener mail, of which I also didn't bring very much. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I really don't know where to start. I have things in an order.
Read
on my
thing.
Sheet. Tim writes, I was listening recently to a radio show on an NPR station. He doesn't mean nonprofits. He means
what?
NPR. They discussed DNA research, and the big issue was creating an entirely artificial human genome for research on diseases.
Mm, yeah.
One of the guests was a member of a medical ethics committee. Good. We need that.
Yeah.
Who kept insisting that there were theological questions that needed to be answered by the scientists before they could create a genome that might someday in the future be used to create an entirely artificial in scare quotes, right, human. Why the fuck does science need to answer any theological questions? Why do religions think they have any right whatsoever to direct scientific research? When will we be able to stop listening to these guys?
Right.
Thank you,
Good
Tim.
Good point.
Well, the real answer is they have no business whatsoever.
Right.
Because they're representatives of bullshit belief systems that have no basis in reality.
Right.
The practical, real answer is scientific funding comes from, you know, the government, which is influenced by the population, yeah, and the population is influenced by these big, horrible organizations with guys who believe bullshit.
Well, that's we still why. Have laws that define what's a human being based on a religious background. The Bill of Rights and things that say all men are created equal.
Well, scientists could create some more equal men. I'm all right with that. Right. I don't see what the problem is.
So you would give something that was essentially a knitted together from molecular soup.
Yeah.
Creature,
yeah.
The yeah. same rights if it had the same genome.
Why not?
As a human?
We're knitted sure. together from molecular soup.
That's right.
What is the difference? I mean, the technical difference that one was engineered intentionally,
yeah,
and the other was just, you know, the product of biology. That should have no bearing at all on the rights of that individual that you get out of the process. Why would
right.
it? Why would it? And all
it
of these
does because
all these...
of legacy. We have thousands and thousands and thousands of Americans who think that what defines a person is when a god puts a little ghost inside right. the combination
right.
of an
you know,
egg and a sperm.
You're explaining yeah. why these people who have a bullshit belief system care. And I get that. I get why they care. But you know, Tim's point is well taken. How is that any of their fucking business, really?
Yeah, well, they're simply hijacking ethics here. They're saying, oh, no, the religions are the
right,
only
totally
arbiters of morality or ethics.
Right, they're totally making
no.
up a problem so that they can be the solution to the problem.
Right.
Well, when there's proof of the existence of a soul, we can actually take that seriously. Mm-hmm. But burden of proof.
Yeah.
Show me the soul.
Yeah. Now, we're not going to be able, we can say this stuff, but we're not going to be able to stop it because,
right.
Because
we have no power.
We have a government and it's, you know, there's voting. And so to some extent, not as much as we'd like, but to
yeah,
some extent, people in government care about what the population thinks.
Mm-hmm.
And, really the only thing we can do is speak out against the bullshit belief systems themselves and hope that they
right.
lose support, because that's really going to be the only way to kick them out.
Yep.
It's at some point, I suppose, it might be possible, while there are still a handful of believers left, it might be possible to get legislation passed to exclude that kind of crap from things like
yeah.
science.
Oh, it is excluded.
Right?
It's called spectral testimony. You know, 1600s.
Well, that's
oh, ghosts.
Yeah. That's but it's not excluded because, you know, Tim's talking about this show where they're
yeah.
talking with,
well, the thing is,
medical
if they,
bioethicists, and this bioethicist's whole thing was based in superstition.
Yeah, but if we
he didn't
get
excluded because we don't allow people to testify in court that, well, you know, Bobby's right. ghost told me that Jim killed him.
But if we can get this crap out of the courts, maybe we can get it out of science.
Well, we have to explain to people
well,
things.
We have got it out of courts. That's your point.
We have to explain.
That's what ended the Salem witch trials.
Yeah.
Well, we have to explain to people it's just not possible to have ghosts and spirits defining what's a person when we have human beings who are chimera people when two embryos combine.
Oh, right, right.
Does that person have two souls?
Absolutely right. Three? Not only is there no evidence that these souls, no positive evidence, there's plenty of negative evidence, things that just raise questions that the believers in this stuff are not prepared to answer.
And like identical twins and triplets.
Right.
Identical triplets. Do they split their soul?
They each have one-third of a soul?
They have one-third of a soul?
Yeah.
The answer is no.
Then they should only have one-third of a vote, right?
Well, yeah, I totally agree with Tim, but I don't see how in the near term we're going to stop it. It just,
well, we can yell at it. That's about it.
Yes, in the long term, what we can do is continue to make our case understood that
keep
that
what
stuff
pressure
has
we
nothing
can.
To do with anything.
Keep up what pressure we can. Shame them into giving it up.
So I mentioned that Amanda was here last time, and we had the discussion about should. Were you here for any
I was
of the
not here for the should.
I think
discussion.
We had two episodes on.
Yeah,
it,
yeah. I was here for the second one.
There was just somebody wrote in a letter who was talking about, you know, things atheists should do, right? And extrapolating from the atheist position to moral views and, you know,
sure,
stuff like that. And I took exception because I just think that doesn't follow. Well, H.J. is apparently the author of the letter that that tried to clarify this, and I just found all kinds of problems with the position that he was taking. And I'm not going to go back and redo that whole thing. People can listen to the earlier episode anyway. So H.J. wrote back to clarify his position, and I want to preface this by saying, to his credit, he took the criticism very well, right? I don't give out cookies for that because that's how people should be able to participate in a conversation when others disagree with them. But the world is full of people who, if you disagree with them, will lose their shit. And he did not lose his shit. So good for that. But I also don't want to belabor this point forever, despite the fact that we have very little material this episode and we're going to kind of have to drag things out a bit. But the core of his argument, right, which he reiterated in this latest letter, is that there are things about deciding you're an atheist that put you up against claims of religion.
Sure.
That by necessity, he says, mean that you have thought about ethical and moral issues, and that therefore it is fair to say that an atheist is a person who should behave or believe X because they are a person who has who's gone through that thought. Mm-hmm. You can make some assumptions about their beliefs beyond merely not believing in the God. And my position was, no, at its core, atheism is you don't believe in a God. What else you do from there is all up to you.
Right.
Okay. And I know what this, underneath all of this, this is an argument about stuff like Atheism Plus, right? That
it seems like
there are that. I think that's why we're wrangling over it. And it's unfortunate that we're wrangling because my view is Atheism Plus is just fine. I have no objection to Atheism Plus. I have no objection to people bringing in other issues and connecting them with their atheism and moving forward with that. I'm totally okay with it. I just don't think that is an objectively obvious thing.
Right. Now, here's a question.
And I think other people, though H.J. has not said Atheism Plus, and I hope I'm not misconstruing him, but I think that there are people who see atheism as necessarily connected to social issues, for example,
right.
Who would like to be able to established that that is objectively what atheism should be.
Right.
Okay. And while I think it's a great thing and I support all of that, I just don't think you can literally connect those dots in a indisputable way. Okay?
Yeah.
So my argument was, look, you know, atheism is at its core just not believing in the God. Boom. The end.
Right.
So H.J. wrote, this is like the core of his response, the only way to be a true lack of belief atheist is to never have been exposed to the arguments for a God in the first place.
I would have to say
this is a no true Scotsman fallacy.
Yeah.
He is attempting to define atheists who merely lack belief out of existence by saying they're not real
lack
of belief atheists, because they'd have to have this additional care, right? It's the true Scotsman doesn't put, what was it, salt in his porridge?
Sugar
in his porridge.
Or
his
something
porridge.
Like that, yeah.
I have encountered a crap ton of arguments for God, and I consider myself a lack of belief atheist. What I mean by that is, hey, you know, I don't see any reason to believe this crap, so I don't.
Right.
But I'm prepared. And in fact, I will go so far as to say, right now, based on the evidence, I think that's wrong. And yet, I am prepared if, you know, something got missed and it gets brought up, I'm prepared to change my view, right? But, and certainly I have, as a lack of belief atheist, I have encountered moral arguments from, say, Christianity and rejected them. But I didn't reject them because of my atheism. And I didn't reject them for my atheism. I rejected them on their merits.
Right.
So, H.J., I think you're really reaching when you try to say that only people who've never actually encountered religious arguments could possibly be be people who reject religion. Reject belief because they lack it. It seems to me, H.A., you're trying to win by defining your opponents out of existence, which is bullshit. Yeah, Amanda.
I think that some recognition of just how many atheists there are is in order here. I was reading an article today when somebody was discussing something political, and they mentioned that the nuns in the United States, as of last year, are close to
N-O-N-E-S.
N-O-N-E-S.
Aha, yes.
Not the N-U-N's. I have a story about them later.
Just want to make sure.
The not affiliated with religious organization folks are approaching 1 in 4. And of those folks, a lot of them belong to organizations in which they self-identify as atheists. Now, language is not completely what the dictionary says, and language is not a democratic process. You can't necessarily vote what a word's going to mean. But the major organizations of people who want to call themselves atheists, at least in the United States, their definition is those who lack a belief in a God.
That seems to be the most inclusive.
And that's partly why they like it.
Yeah.
And there can certainly be more to it than that, right? I mean, I am not arguing against the existence of atheists who see, from their perspective, it appears to them that atheism leads to specific stances on social issues, right? If that's how they want to put those things together in their head, that's fine. The only issue here is this nitpicky thing of whether that is a necessary connection.
Right.
Right. Whether that is an objectively obvious and inescapable connection, or whether it's merely, you know, and the answer is it's different things to different people.
Yeah.
And I don't think either, you know, I would certainly never try to win my side of the argument by defining atheist plus people out of existence. I love those people.
Well, that's a sect, if you will. A category is atheist plus.
Yeah, is it still a thing?
Oh, probably at some level. I haven't heard much from them.
Yeah,
maybe.
I haven't heard. There was bit of a kerfluffle a year or two ago, and then silence. Not sure if anybody really.
So anyway, that's that. But there are certainly. The issue is still there, whether the term is in play, whether there's organized groups of people under that term. That doesn't matter. That never mattered.
I think those who self-identify as atheists should have a say in what they think it means now that they've chosen to accept that label.
Yeah, and you're not going to get agreement on that.
That's true.
Because Raelians.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, that's the kind of thing that makes me just shake my head at this idea that there's some
monolithic,
some monolithic definition of atheism that defines what atheists must be and therefore what they should do, which was the whole core of this discussion. Right. Now, I think Raelians are full of shit, but not because they're doing atheism wrong. I think they're full of shit because they're full of shit on questions of fact.
Yeah. Explain Raelians.
Oh, so Raelians are this weird cult who don't believe in gods, but they do believe that humans were like engineered by space aliens.
Right.
It's just ridiculous, but that doesn't make them not atheists. Right. And I can't support any argument that tries to define them away just because we don't like
because
them?
They're embarrassing.
Just because they're embarrassing? No. What matters is what's actually going on.
Yeah.
Seems to me.
Big tent atheism.
As a quick follow up to that, and I'm going to pat myself on the back a little bit via this letter from John from Orlando, who says,
"Yes,
many thanks, Jeff, for sparing some of us from atheist obligation." Jeff was spot on when framing everything in terms of goals. My argument was you can say should in the context of what are your goals and
how
to get there.
Right.
And I should really soften that a bit because obviously in casual language you can use that word all the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's just that if you use that term seriously without first checking to make sure that what you think that other person's goals are in line with what they actually are, then you're just telling them what to do, which is, you know, you can do that, but that is not inherently justified. Okay. John goes on. I think we could totally replace the word should with some variation of recommend. Even if it had to be the much aligned passive voice, e.g., if you want to educate your community, becoming an activist would be recommended by many. Well, that would be accurate.
Yeah.
I second that, John, because there's an archaic meaning to should. The old meaning is you must. Ten Commandments, thou shalt not.
Right.
And in more modern use, it's more principles based where you should do this unless there's a really good reason not to.
All right. Amanda, did you have anything you wanted to bring in, or should I just keep reading?
I got something
stuff?
A little bit on the lighter side here.
Okay.
I write things on Facebook under the name Manda, because that's my name.
Dun, dun, dun.
And I write the weird word of the day. Not every day, but once in a while. And today's weird word is sedevacantist. Anybody ever heard of that?
Can you spell?
No.
Sedevacantist. It's got deva and vacant in there.
Never heard of it.
It's not usable in Scrabble, so...
You told me about it earlier today, but I'll pretend.
Why is it not usable in Scrabble? Is it not a real word?
It's from the Catholic Church. Catholic Church.
Why does that make it illegal for Scrabble?
Does that mean it's a made-up word?
Is it?
Aren't all words made up?
It's not accepted.
Who says you... You mean it's not in the official Scrabble dictionary?
It's not.
Okay.
For whatever the reason is. Okay.
Sedevacantism is the position held by a minority of traditionalist Catholics that the present occupant of the Holy See, S-E-E, is not truly Pope. Some believe the Pope's espousal of the heresy of modernism means the position of Pope has been vacant since the death of Pope Pius XII in 1958.
Wow.
The word comes...
These guys are serious.
Oh, it goes back farther than that.
Okay.
The word comes from the Latin phrase sede vacante, meaning the seat is empty. Mm. The seat to which they refer is the chair of the first pope, St. Peter. The phrase Holy See refers to that seat. There are actually numerous, apparently independent, sedevacantist organizations... But nobody knows just how many sedevacantist individuals there are. Estimates range from tens to hundreds of thousands. Some of these have gone so far as to select a pope on their own. These are known as conclavists. Generally, though, they declare their leaders bishop, which raises fewer eyebrows.
Uh-huh.
Numerous organizations follow the pattern of declaring themselves the legitimate Catholic succession while rejecting the Vatican's pope. In the past, this disconnection was played down to the point of church members simply not being informed that their local church was not accountable to the Vatican in any way. These groups clearly referred to themselves as Catholic and sometimes Roman Catholic, and many of them run highly lucrative Catholic schools for children. The hotbed of sedevacantism is apparently the United States. In Minnesota, there is the conclave of Full Circle Catholicism. In New York, there is the Most Holy Family Monastery, founded by Father Feeney, a Jesuit priest who was excommunicated for disobedience. He called his initial group the Slaves of the Immaculate Heart of Mary. That sounds grim.
Wow.
One of the best-known sedevacantist groups is the Congregation of Mary Immaculate, Queen of the Universe. These are the followers of the teachings of Saint-Louis-Marie Grignion de Montfort, 1673 to 1716. So this goes way back farther than the 50s and the 60s.
Uh-huh.
These are also known as the Fatima Crusaders. The various Fatima churches, there's a lot of them, are based on visions of apparitions of the Virgin Mary. They were reported in 1917 by three shepherd children at the Cova da Iria in Fatima, Portugal. The three little children were Lucia Santos and her cousins Jacinta and Francisco Marto. They claimed to have seen a brightly glowing woman who told them to pray the rosary and gave them other instructions. Amongst the doctrines, now here's how it relates to atheism, amongst the doctrines of the Fatima churches is the practice of acts of reparation, specifically, usually, acts of reparation to the Virgin Mary. This is a doctrine specifically relating to blasphemy. Sacrifices are to be made, and if they're made to the church, it counts more. And in exchange, the souls of those who are in hell for not believing in God are forgiven. The idea that there is provision for saving heretics, and after the fact, no less, is
from
one
hell.
Of the most popular tenets of this flavor of Catholicism. So, you know, you can laugh and scoff at these guys, but they're not haters.
Right.
They they are. I mean, they have no fucking business inducting atheists into their club post-mortem. That is just, they have no business crapping on the memory of an atheist who spent their whole life not believing that shit by saying, we did this, and obviously they know that it's true now because they went to hell, right?
And
they have seen the truth, but they're still held accountable, but we're doing this magic trick in order to get them off.
The dead can't defend themselves from this.
Stop circumcising the dead over in Israel. And the it's the Mormons do the same shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Post-mortem baptisms.
Yeah. Bullshit. Fuck that. But you know, the one thing about the dead is they can't fight back.
Right. So easy targets. Yay. Yep. For vultures. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I had a thought.
What's that?
So if there's set of vacantists, can there be preset of vacantists? Can I use
What's
this word?
That?
Can I borrow it to describe my feelings toward the results of the American Electoral College as opposed to the choice of the popular vote? I sympathize with this.
Let's not go there. I don't think we should go there. But I get your point. There's a level on which, you know, my reaction to the story is, okay, fine, so there's yet one more denomination that I didn't know about.
Right.
But it's interesting when we had the Pope recently with his weird comment about atheists can go to heaven.
Right? Yeah.
Was that him trying to, you know, bring the set of
set of vacantists
into the fold or reach out to them or
I think that was an olive
build
branch
bridges
I
or
really
whatever
do.
Because you guys, I mean, they're again, they got no business making any statements about what happens to dead atheists after we're gone, right? I mean, what the atheist believed in life is what they believed.
But you can see how this appeals to people.
Totally.
You know, your grandmother is very terrified that her grandson is going to hell.
And I could totally see how a religious organization would want to cash in on grandma's terror by getting her to cough up some bucks. Totally see it.
So they can save their... Yeah.
So they're not,
their,
you know,
atheist son
far from limiting their misdeeds to, you know, crapping on the memories of the dead. They'll also get some money out of grandma.
You're not cynical, though.
Speaking of the, I don't think that's cynical. I think that's accurate.
I think that's factual.
Yeah. Speaking of the Pope.
What's he done? Like?
So, you know, the president, the Pope, the guy that all those other Catholics do think should be on the chair.
Right.
You know, our president has signed an executive order about refugees.
Yeah.
And then the Pope came out and said, you can't be against refugees if you're a Christian. Right.
Yeah.
And then our president took a swipe at him. Probably in Twitter, I assume, right?
At 3 a.m.
It's always amusing to watch people that I despise yelling at each other. But, you know, once again, when the Pope said that, you had all these people coming out of the woodwork going, oh, I love this Pope so much.
Right.
Because he says all the. Yeah, you know what is extremely Christian? Marching huge fucking armies across Europe to go and slaughter a bunch of Muslims because they're living on land you want for yourselves.
Yeah.
Don't be telling me it's not Christian to go after, you know, refugees who are Muslim. That is not siding with my country's president, okay?
Right.
That is, let's be honest about the actual viewpoints of the actual characters at play in this little conflict between these two guys.
Yeah. Yeah, but look beyond this to the framing. It's brilliant. When you say a real Christian or a real Catholic is X, you're setting yourself up as the authority to say what's a real Christian.
Or,
and that's
or
exactly
when you say
what these folks
what a real
don't
lack of
think
belief
he can
atheist
do.
Is.
Huh?
Or when you say what a real lack of belief atheist has to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree.
No atheist puts salt in his pottage.
No true atheist.
Sigh.
No true Christian.
Yeah, because what matters is what's actually going on, not momentary.
Yeah, all I get is apparently
power plays for popularity.
You look at a lot of Christians here in the U.S., and a lot of them are just fine with the exclusion of
Right.
refugees.
They, yes, a lot of them.
So apparently, You can.
Well, say then there are the Christians who want to agree with the Pope, who say those people that are in favor of keeping out the refugees aren't true Christians.
Aren't true Christians, right.
And we're off to the races with them beating up on each other about who can wear the actual tag.
Wow. Well, I have a quote from...
It's a lot easier. You do it, you know, my view is if you say you're an atheist, you're an atheist. If you say you're an atheist because you don't believe in the God, then that's why.
Yeah.
We take that for granted, right? That an individual person is the only one who can really comment on what's going on inside their head.
Right.
They could be lying, but what are you going to do, right?
Yeah.
Until you actually catch them...
If people self-identify...
If people self-identify
as Christian,
I am
in no position to contradict them.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Particularly when there are
clear examples of Christianity vast numbers of Christians behaving in a way that completely disputes the Pope's claim.
Yeah.
And then it's just, he's just saying shit to hear himself speak.
What's that?
Yeah, Amanda.
Well, I have a quote from Yaldina, @Yaldina on Twitter. Uh-huh. And she writes, "I am German. I am atheist. And I am banned from entering the U.S. Muslim ban, as much as the whole ban is wrong, the name itself is, too. What's disturbing about the ban is these are the most Muslim countries, and those that are dominated by a fundamentalist government movement, these are the places where the people coming into the United States, the only thing that's wrong with them is they're the wrong religion.
Yep.
And it's not Muslims... We're bouncing off of it. It's the refugees, and a lot of them are Christians.
And you know, the guy in the White House was very, very clear that he wanted to ban Muslims specifically,
right?
And his staff have referred to what's going on as a Muslim ban, and But, of course, the moment that there's a constitutional challenge to it, that you're banning people from entry on the basis of religion, which would be a violation of the Establishment Clause, then all of a sudden it's, it's not.
Right.
It's not specifically to target a religion. Just come on. Just don't lie about it.
Let me give some specifics on that.
That's what I don't understand is anybody caught in a lie who then... They pretend like they never said it, or like they didn't mean literally what they said, instead of fessing up. Yeah, oops, shouldn't have done it that way. Okay, let's take that down. Right. Here's a way to do the thing we want, what we're saying we really wanted, right? Here's the way to do that right. That's how a reasonable person caught in a mistake behaves.
I don't agree, Jeff.
No?
Because your motive in the law, you can't just say, I didn't really mean that. In December in 2015, Trump said he was calling for a complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States.
Yeah, no, I am not saying that changing it now would undo what he said in the past. But what he is saying now is that, it's not targeted at Muslims, and the way to behave if that is what you mean when faced with a challenge that says yes, you're targeting Muslims, is to stop doing what you're doing and come up with a new thing that actually doesn't target Muslims if you insist that that is not your goal.
But he can't do that.
Why not?
Because he's on record personally saying that, and furthermore, this is from an interview.
You mean there might be no way to fix it? Well, darn.
Well, here's an interview that's from January 25th. So this is fairly recent. This is on Fox News. The host, Jeanine Pirro, asked, "Does the ban have anything to do with religion?" And Giuliani said, when Trump first announced it, he said, "Muslim ban." He called me up. He said, "Put a commission together. Show me the right way to do it legally." It, in this case, of course, is a ban on Muslims. Giuliani's admission is a textbook case of drafting an order in a way that avoids overt declaration of, and here's the words, here's the key words to remember, animus against a religious or ethnic group while retaining the motive and much of the effect. So when that challenge is made, they are going to say, what did you really mean? And they will be able to refer to this very clearly. And it is unconstitutional.
No, because I agree with all of that. I don't know why you think that we're on the opposite side.
Well, I just want the specifics down so that it can't be brushed under the carpet. And people who are listening, we love you. And I want to say direct quotes, not just vague.
Yeah.
Well, it sounded like didn't like Muslims.
That's fine. No, it's look, it doesn't matter what he wants. It matters what he does, right? And what he says. If he now says that targeting Muslims isn't his goal, then he could propose a different way of doing things that did not do that.
Well, and the legal standards trap him into it. His animus is noted.
No,
and logged,
you're saying
so
that
he can't get out
that,
from it.
You're saying that once the words "I want to ban Muslims" are out of his mouth, there's no such thing as a program that would address security concerns without being in violation of the Establishment Clause. And I think that's not true. There are totally some things. They might be extremely limited things he could do that would address valid security concerns. But he's not even trying to do that. He's saying, no, I didn't mean it the way that it actually is.
Right.
And refusing to take it down and deploy something that would be legal.
Well, no, Jeff. The thing is, even if he has a reason to do it that's a legitimate reason, it doesn't stop being unconstitutional because it discriminates.
I'm saying this should go away. And he should do something different if he was not lying, right? If he's not lying, then the thing he's done, which was a mistake that he says is not meant to target Muslims, but obviously does, that needs to go away, and that he could try something else that didn't target Muslims, and that would be in line with the words coming out of his mouth.
What would you suggest is a way to not target Muslims?
I have no idea. I have no idea, but not even trying to come up with such a thing is pretty fucking telling.
Well, yeah.
Okay, we're on the same page. I don't know what we're fighting about. All right. Well, so anyway, Dennis.
What?
I don't suppose you have a question.
Well, yeah, kind of have a question. It's like, is this maybe a rephrasing of something I've argued about another time?
I don't think so. Go ahead.
Don't think so? Good. Yeah. Let's give it a try. Okay, here's my question.
Uh-huh.
Crucifixion, good thing or bad thing?
From whose perspective?
From the perspective of the Christian.
Oh, you mean?
Was the crucifixion of Jesus Christ a good thing or a bad thing?
Right, because it's this fundamental thing at the core of a belief system.
Yeah.
They obviously have to be in favor of it having happened.
Yes.
And yet they talk about how it was so horrible.
Right, which is really strange. That's got to cause some kind of cognitive dissonance because it's just crazy.
Well, okay. Let's try to cut them some slack first. Right?
Okay.
You know the people that came out of the woodwork when Trump won the election? And because they were mad about the way that, say, Bernie Sanders was treated.
Oh, right.
They then turn around and say, well, good, I'm glad that Trump was elected because the nation's just getting what it deserves.
Right.
I just float that as an example of people spinning bad things into good things.
Right.
It's not – it may still be crazy, but it's not as – uncommon as
I'm not thinking it's that uncommon. No.
Well, from the rationalist perspective, you have to separate effects that have a causal relationship and effects that are causal, but also not meaningful.
Uh-huh.
If a murderer gets born from a woman, mom is not liable for the murders that the murderer commits,
right,
because her giving birth, although it was causally necessary for this murderer to exist, there's no probable reason to think that getting pregnant and having the baby relates in a rational, meaningful way to the murders that get committed.
Right.
So that Christians, of course, totally disagree with everything you just said, because they think that everybody is responsible for – they think people are responsible for things that happened before they were born. Right?
Right.
Like they would wanna hold the baby responsible for the murder mom committed. I mean, that's
– Right. Well, it's weird because it's so like –
They just don't have the same kind of – they don't look at that causality the same way.
Well, it's a very important thing.
Which is a causality without chronological order.
Well,
right.
Causality that's meaningful and causality that's not meaningful.
Uh-huh.
It's a very important principle. You know, the legal standard of, did somebody put salt on the walk? And all you folks out there,
right,
who are dealing with ice, I'm so sorry, but it was 70 degrees here.
Yes,
so
we've
sorry.
Been walking around in shirt sleeves for the last week.
Oh, poor us.
Yeah. Crunching on the salt.
Yeah.
No. Right. So, but your question is,
yeah,
from the perspective of the Christian?
Yeah.
It's both.
It's both. It's a good thing and
it's a
bad thing.
It's a necessary bad thing.
Right. Now,
and wow, when I say it that way, I got to step back a second and say, I think there are necessary bad things,
mm-hmm,
right? I mean, because there isn't perfection, I think it's perfectly reasonable to accept that there could be inefficiencies, there could be accidents, there could be all
sure
kinds of things that cannot be eliminated, right?
Yeah.
And they're going to happen.
Sure.
And they're without them happening, we would be doing nothing. And so, you know, like jet airplanes, right?
Right.
Occasionally you have a horrific crash. Are the horrific crashes justifications for not having the airplanes? No.
No.
Right? So there are...
We accept the risk.
We accept the risk, and we don't just accept the risk. We accept the actual occurrence of
right
the bad events.
Yeah.
As part of our cost-benefit analysis
right
of the thing. And if we look at it that way, cost-benefit analysis.
Right.
Right. If Jesus hadn't been crucified.
Right.
Let's just see. It doesn't even have to be specifically crucified. If he had not died for their sins.
Right.
Which involved dying at some point. Dying of old age for their sins, I think even Christians would realize that would be a stretch.
Yeah.
Right. So he had to die prematurely or otherwise
right,
it doesn't.
Well, they assume so.
Because
but really, there is no direct causal link between him dying and them getting their salvation.
You're
there's
right.
There's no mechanism for that.
The mechanism
they just
is magic.
Hand wave it.
Yeah. The mechanism is magic. The mechanism
right
is the same mechanism by which all sacrifices.
Right. So really, old age could
right
work.
You chop the slit the neck of the lamb on the altar, right?
Right.
And the blood
right
rolls down into the bucket or whatever, right? And that makes a thing happen. It's
right
that.
It's magic, yeah.
So they believe in magic, so you got to factor that in. It's cost-benefit magic.
I think that Jesus okayed it. He consented.
Oh, sure.
So
it was
freaky,
suicide by cop.
It was a freaky S&M thing.
Yeah, it was suicide
well
by cop.
First he asked, please don't.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then he goes, okay, fine. Because God said,
yeah,
no, you're going through with it.
Right.
So we didn't kill him.
These are the same guys.
He consented to it. He decided that he was going to go through with that.
Yeah, and this is part of God's plan.
Yeah.
So basically, it's all a big show. It has to happen.
Yeah, but there's so many
To happen.
There's so many moving parts on this, right? Because you got to also factor in that you know, we say Jesus, they say Jesus died, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Except there he is now, right. Vice president of the entire universe,
yeah.
Sitting at God's right hand. So death, they cry about the horrificness of the death, but then they make the death meaningless by having their whole heaven thing.
So right. Jesus was momentarily inconvenienced for your sins.
Yeah. Right.
And sure, I mean, you can play that up as much as you like. You can use whatever special effects Mel Gibson that you want, right, to make that as bad as possible. There are people who have gone through worse suffering than that.
Right.
Right?
But it when I'm saying it's a show and it has to happen, it's that it God, how do I describe it? I can't describe it. I'm it's evacuating my head as I conceive of the
how about
the comment.
Thinking of it as a sock puppet?
Yeah.
This is Jesus. Jesus, you have to die. No, I don't want to die. Must I die?
Yeah.
Yes, Jesus. This is for the greater good. Oh, okay.
Oh,
ow.
They got what they wanted.
It's the sock puppet Jesus.
Everyone got what they wanted. The Jesus was supposed to be a sacrifice. The God got the sacrifice. The people got the salvation. It's like it's this business transaction.
But
it's not a terrible awful thing that happens. It's just a business transaction.
You can start
to make the thing work.
You can start to tell a story about one party that didn't get what they want.
Uh-huh.
If even though it is not explained why this should be, right? But if Satan wanted people not to have their sins forgiven.
Yeah.
Which, you know, in a dumb kind of, I get to have more people living with me down in hell then, right?
Right. Which
except
is
that, except the moment you scratch the surface of that, it's like, what's Satan doing in hell exactly?
Yeah. I mean, the whole thing falls apart really quick.
Yeah, the whole thing, it's just all smoke and mirrors.
More sock puppets.
Yeah.
To get maximum, like, emotional impact.
Yes.
Out of the flimsiest fucking story you could possibly put together. I know, man.
It's weird.
I know.
I guess maybe I'll have to do this in a following episode, but I think I've got my emotional argument against Christianity.
What's that?
Well, I'll bring it up at a different time.
You know,
but it's strongly related to this.
We're coming up on Mardi Gras and Lent. Uh-huh. In February, and one of the medieval legends of the crucifixion is that the devil supposedly lost the power to kill people.
At the crucifixion?
Yeah. That was the ritual, that the magical ritual deprived Satan.
An additional magical.
Something he used to be able to do.
Magical repercussion.
And that's Lent, is it?
Yeah.
So when's rented?
Rent. Sorry. Well, you rent your clothes, don't you, when something happens?
Remind us all, what's the Bible story that from which Lent emerges?
Well, if the groundhog sees his shadow.
No. Come on. I'm serious.
I don't know.
Do we know?
I don't know.
Speaking of days coming up, Darwin Day.
Yay.
Is coming up on the, I believe, the 12th. Yeah, February 12th. There's a Darwin Day website where you can go and find out all the Darwin Day thingies happening. They have, you can read proclamations from various states and find out about events happening in your area. I can tell you that here in Austin, there is a Darwin Day event that Amanda and I will be at.
Cool.
Running sessions of our caveman role-playing game, Cavemaster.
Right. There you go.
Which will be fun.
Yeah.
So stop by. Sit down.
This is the time of year.
Grab some rocks and have an adventure.
Yeah.
This is the time of year that we, some of us, you don't have to do this to be a true atheist, but some of us like to give kids evolution-related toys. And it can be as simple as stuffed turtle in honor of the turtles that Darwin's shipmates dragged onto the ship and slaughtered and ate.
Right.
I think I would have liked to have had a Darwin's Ark, a Darwin's Beagle, instead of a Noah's Ark.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I think it's okay to cheer on Darwin, who discovered evolution, but to kind of cheer on evolution, no. Evolution is not our friend.
The problem with a Darwin's Beagle is that while he did get a lot of samples of creatures, they were mostly like, you know, pinned to cards or held in bottles of formaldehyde.
Folded into books or whatever.
He did eat a lot of them.
Or eaten, yeah.
Yeah.
But that's a cool thing. I mean, like, you could eat, well, no, it's less that.
And did he drop off rats on the island?
The moment I started thinking
island?
About actually saying out loud, it became less cool.
Yeah.
You could, on Darwin Day, you could just try to eat a different kind of animal each year.
And didn't their visit drop off rats on that island?
Possibly, but there were other ships.
Yeah, okay.
Well, one of the things Darwin is known for is the origin of species, but his lesser-known work is the power of motion in plants.
Huh.
And we owe his stay-at-home gardener side, as opposed to his going out to sea and getting seasick on the beagle side, his explorer side. But when he got back to England, he was an avid gardener, and he studied plant reproduction. Ooh. And he is credited with the discovery of hybrid vigor, which is when you cross two closely related species, what comes out is usually bigger, stronger, faster, smarter, and more durable and more disease resistant. And it's from Darwin's discovery that the hybridization movement that increase the yields of all our plants, of all our crop plants, comes out. Darwin is responsible for the high yields that we have in food today.
Hmm. So to improve the human race, if we want to practice eugenics, we should be bonking apes?
There are a lot of folks who say,
as Bulworth said in the movie Bulworth, everybody should fuck everybody until we're all the same color.
Well, there you go.
Some folks say that the reason Darwin's work was suppressed was not his espousing of evolution and there not being a god. He was a deist and was very troubled by the idea of there not being someone in charge. No, what the opposition was based on was he was saying things that the conclusion was racial mixing is necessary, is good. And a lot of his opponents were against that.
Right, of course.
All right. I should mention, by the way, that we said that Darwin Day is on February 12th, which is in fact the case. But the event that Amanda and I will be at, excuse me, here in Austin is on the 11th. Darwin Day observed.
Didn't Darwin also write The Lusty Argonian Maid, I think? Little known book of his.
You can't see eyes going wide at this.
Well, okay. So one more thing
I
want to talk about before the show is over is it's a moral and ethical question, and we can get back to this.
Ooh.
You know, this topic kind of relating to HJ's and letter and the whole question about what is atheism, how does atheism direct us morally and ethically?
So,
I think the answer is it doesn't.
What should we do?
I think what happens is we get religion out of the way, and then we can start thinking clearly.
Yeah.
But there's this guy, Richard Spencer, who got punched.
Oh, right.
Richard Spencer, who is a white supremacist neo-Nazi, who will deny those labels, but you look at what he does. Got punched, and this led to a great big discussion on the internet, all over Facebook. And it's It is an extremely messy discussion to have.
Yep.
Because on the one hand, it's against the law.
Yeah.
Clearly.
Sure.
To punch a guy just because of what they said. We've also got a number of very high profile inspirational figures in history. Martin Luther King, right, for example. Champions of Gandhi, champions of
nonviolent protest.
Nonviolent protest. Nonviolent protest is awesome. The law is awesome. And yet, I want to read a passage from Karl Popper, philosopher of science. He's not talking about science here, and one might argue that he's out of his field, and that therefore we should factor that in. But on the subject of violence in the service of tolerance, the so-called paradox of freedom is the argument that freedom, in the sense of absence of any constraining control, must lead to very great restraint, since it makes the bully free to enslave the meek. The idea is, in a slightly different form and with very different tendency, clearly expressed in Plato. Less well known is the paradox of tolerance. Unlimited tolerance must lead to the disappearance of tolerance.
Right.
If we extend unlimited tolerance even to those who are intolerant, if we are not prepared to defend a tolerant society against the onslaught of the intolerant, then the tolerant will be destroyed and tolerance with them. In this formulation, I do not imply, for instance, that we should always suppress the utterance of intolerant philosophies. As long as we can counter them by rational argument and keep them in check by public opinion, suppression would certainly be unwise. But we should, there he's using should, but it's in the context of an argument and what our goals are. We should claim the right to suppress them, if necessary, even by force. For it may easily turn out that they are not prepared to meet us on the level of rational argument, but begin by denouncing all argument. They may forbid their followers to listen to rational argument because it is deceptive, and teach them to answer arguments by the use of their fists or pistols. We should therefore claim, in the name of tolerance, the right not to tolerate the intolerant. We should claim that any movement preaching intolerance places itself outside the law, and we should consider incitement to intolerance and persecution as criminal in the same way as we should consider incitement to murder or to kidnapping or to the revival of the slave trade as criminal. That's from Karl Popper's The Open Society and Its Enemies. Now, this is like scary stuff.
It is.
I am a huge fan of peace and violence and rational discussion, right?
Wait, say that again.
I am a huge fan of peace and nonviolence.
Ah, there you go. Thank you.
Did I say violence?
Yes, you said violence. Sorry.
I like
wait
violence.
A minute.
And
what?
Rational discussion.
Yeah.
I prefer my violence to be imaginary, right?
Yeah.
Safely in the fantasy world of games. That's where I prefer. Violence scares me.
That's where we can be murder hobos. Yes.
I am not eager to go around punching anybody.
Right.
Even Nazis. However, his Karl Popper's point is well taken.
It is.
Now,
sadly,
this issue with Richard Spencer being punched, it is not at all obvious that was necessary.
Right.
For any greater goal. But I think a lot of people are concerned that we are at or near or past a tipping point where rational argument will be useful. And how
Sadly.
Would we even know that?
Mm-hmm. I think we need to review, Mr. Popper, what the difference is between a criminal act and a civil violation.
Uh-huh.
We have in our society in the United States two different categories of things that break the law. In one, it's what we would consider justifiable to lock someone up. In the other category, we think it's wrong and we want to stop it or suppress it or cause it to not happen somehow, but it's not something for which we'll take violent action. For example,
Give us an example.
Staying in the United States when you have your visa and it wears out. That's against the law, but it's not criminal. And if somebody...
It isn't?
No, it's a civil violation. We don't lock people up for it. At least we're not supposed to, because that's unconstitutional. It's in the same category as parking in the handicap spot. You know, the FBI doesn't come and bust into your house and put handcuffs on you and say, you parked in the handicap zone.
I think you will find that civil violations, while they do not themselves lead to jail time, failure to comply with the penalties, the civil penalties, will lead to jail time. So ultimately, it's the same thing.
Well, that's a legal crock, actually, and it's unconstitutional. And there are laws that are carried out just as you say. And that's what some people out there of a certain political party are trying to undo. And because of this crock, they're trying to make overstaying your immigration stay a crime. And the rationale is, well, people who have done this may go on to rob, steal, murder. But just because you're in the category of people who did one particular civil violation, like if you parked in that handicap spot, it doesn't retroactively make that a crime. If someone parks in the handicap spot and then they gun down a cop, we can't say, well, look, that person who parked there gunned down a cop. Therefore, this is also a crime. No, it remains a civil offense.
Similarly, hitting someone
is in the category of actions that you would take to stop a crime. You know, if somebody's assaulting you and you hit them, that's a lot more justifiable. But if they park in a handicap spot, you don't haul off and slug them.
Karl Popper is calling for incitement to intolerance and persecution to be criminalized. That is specifically what he is advising.
Well, he's got an overly broad, unenforceable statute that says, you know, there's no standard here. Is calling somebody an ugly name, like the N-word? You know, let's take a word that's a swipe at white people. Calling somebody honky, is that incitement or not? It's intolerance.
Well,
but he's got a category that's damn big.
Is there, is it a civil offense?
Yeah.
Currently?
Yeah.
So there's an offense.
You can take someone to court for a bad name.
So there's an offense, and there is a means of determining whether that offense has occurred.
Yeah.
And at the moment, it's civil.
Yes.
And Karl Popper is calling for making that criminal.
Well, there's a standard we have here of conspiracy. You know, a dear friend of mine said, I'd like to start a GoFundMe to hire assassins. And she was probably joking. She's one of the most peaceful, sweet people I know.
Mm-hmm.
And she was just letting off steam. But that's a form of incitement. And I could see that as being construed as, you know, a call to action. And the point at which we consider something real conspiracy, there's a standard of no return.
I don't know why you're bringing conspiracy into it.
Because when Popper refers to incitement, he's making an overly broad category that includes my friend letting off steam on Facebook, joking about hiring hitmen through a GoFundMe.
Okay, fine.
And but somebody who actually organizes an army.
This is not a legal document.
This is a philosophical argument.
Well,
right?
The laws have philosophies behind them.
So maybe rather than picking apart the specific words, the issue is his point, which is well taken, that if we, in the absence of any opposition to intolerance, can lead to the forces of intolerance growing to the point where they take charge, then you lose your tolerant society. It just goes away.
Sure, we should not be tolerant of intolerance.
Right.
That's not too hard to figure out.
So what?
How do we do that?
And the point is that, and Popper's all for limiting that to rational argument and discussion for as long as possible.
Yeah.
But
at some point,
if at some point, and I think there are a lot of people who feel we are reaching that point if we haven't already passed it, that is no longer enough. Then what? And we're not really while he is suggesting a legal
remedy
in that last paragraph, right? On insufficiently specific terms, granted. The question is, how do we determine when that point has been reached? And does he even have a point? Because if you want to say, hey, I don't care. I mean, I have literally had discussions with people on Facebook whose response was, look, you know, we set up the system. And if the system, within the bounds of the rules of our system, we can't keep our tolerant society, then our tolerant society didn't deserve to exist. That unless we adhere to our rules perfectly, then the whole and that's not enough to keep it together. Then it should all fall apart and the forces of intolerance should take over.
I think we already have laws that cover this, and that the line between conspiracy and just blowing off steam or hate speech and saying something that other people don't like to hear
is
the point of no return.
I have long been opposed to the idea of hate speech as a separate law.
Yeah.
Because I'm a big supporter of freedom of speech, right? So I'm very challenged by Popper's argument here that, you know, he makes a damn good point that if that's not enough, then what? Then we have to reserve the right to act.
If one side goes outside the rules to gain supremacy,
it's not even outside the rules. The rule is you can say whatever you want. Well, if in the course of saying whatever they want, they get enough people to agree with them, right?
Yeah.
Then the majority are the people who are intolerant and the whole thing crashes.
Well, the hate speech thing is not as nebulous as you seem to think it is, Jeff. It has a lot to do with making specific threats. It has to do with specific calls to action.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, we're not talking just about saying something ugly that someone doesn't want to hear.
Right.
Well, then, is hate speech law civil or criminal?
It depends on what somebody says. Threatening people, that's criminal.
But that threatening people is threatening, and that is a separate question from hate speech. Actually, you can threaten a guy and have it not be hate speech if it's your neighbor and you don't like where they park their car, and you go over and you make violent threats against them.
The definitions that I've read is making it a crime when it's not one person. It's not letting people get away with it because they've voiced opposition or persecution of a group.
I'm not following you.
If somebody says, let's kill Joe,
hate speech.
That's a threat against Joe. But if somebody says, let's kill all the purple people, that's hate speech. It's still a threat, but it's directed against a group, and it doesn't get off the hook because it's a group.
But then it's a violation of the law against threatening speech, plus the additional penalty for it being hate.
Right.
And that's precisely what I disliked about the idea of hate speech legislation is we've already got laws in place against this, and that just seems like
adding something on top of it.
It troubles me. But
I'm thinking about back in time when atheists in Austin were a much younger group, and in the atheist community of Austin, folks would say something to the effect of, they would say to atheists something to the effect of, if you say to somebody their God doesn't exist, they're going to hit you. I'm not saying it's right to hit you, but you should be prepared. And this kind of talk is a veiled threat. And worse than that, it's blaming the victim, because it hints that if some action is taken against someone for disagreeing with their religion, that it was justified. You shouldn't have done it because you knew it was going to happen.
Well,
and freedom of speech has to allow it, even if you know people are going to get upset.
Well, your example there is telling somebody their God doesn't exist. And the example here is
a Nazi getting hit in the face.
Atlantic Magazine, which is recording footage of Spencer for a documentary, published a video of the event in November where the racism and anti-Semitism of the alt-right movement were on display in Washington at a gathering to celebrate Trump's victory. The video showed the audience member apparently giving the Nazi salute, yelling, "Hail Trump, hail our people, hail victory." And Spencer's remarks are filled with racist imagery, including references to the black political machines and Latino housekeepers. That's not a very strong example. Spencer denied being a white supremacist in a December 2016 interview, but in that interview he said, quote, "Only white people can support what we call Western civilization," unquote. He also said that there should be a, quote, "peaceful ethnic cleansing," unquote, meaning individuals not of European descent should voluntarily leave the United States. So
right.
I will hold the damage done by expressing my opinion that a person's God is imaginary up against saying that only white people can support Western civilization and calling for all non-white people to leave the country. I'll hold that atheist statement up against that any day of the week. We are not in the same category.
But if somebody gets hit in the face,
yeah,
they still didn't deserve it because what they did was talk. And the penalty for talking is not getting assaulted.
And the issue is not. You're right. Legally, that is absolutely true.
Right.
I think it's a good legal standard. We are talking strategically on the level of the entire society about Karl Popper's point. If you tolerate all speech, and as a result, the intolerant speech catches on and spreads, that is the end of your tolerant society. Therefore, you must reserve the right at some point to step in and say no with force if necessary. That is the argument. This is aside from what the law currently is. This is just I think, an entirely valid observation.
Yeah, it's a logical...
then the question is, are we at that point yet? And how, if at all, should such a thing be implemented?
How should we proceed?
He suggests making it he suggests enforcing this through law. It's obviously,
that's one way.
Individuals taking it into their own hands to lash out whenever they feel like it is problematic on many levels.
Yes.
But we are for sure not at a place where we can expect, even if we were all to agree here at this table, right?
Yeah.
Even if all liberal people, tolerant people were to agree that there should be laws against intolerant speech backed up by force. I don't think we're at a place right now politically where those laws would ever come about.
I think we're in a better position than places like Germany that have censorship laws are at. When you suppress speech, You drive it into the corners, the little hidden closets where people get funny costumes on and it festers.
I would rather it go into a closet and fester than that it be right up front on my TV, right? Entire networks supporting, entire news networks supporting it out in broad daylight right now. I mean, that's a great idea that you want it to be out in public where you can spot it, but then what are you going to do? If you can spot it and it's everywhere and it's too much and they're not listening to reason, then what the hell do you do?
I think that people who don't listen to reason still have a right to free speech.
Well, they do. They absolutely do. The question is, should they?
We followed
this. And I'm using should now in the context of our goal of maintaining
a tolerant society.
Tolerant society.
Well, I remember being
at what point is it okay to say that is enough? Shut the fuck up. You are not going to be allowed to continue.
I think the old standard that we've had for hundreds of years is the right one, and we maintain it. When I was on the Atheist Experience, the things you were not allowed to do, one of the few things you weren't allowed to do was a call to action.
Right.
And I think that that's what maintained the peace. And when Popper calls for intolerance of intolerance, I think that the first line of offense for people who are trying to put a lid on that is not suppression, but mockery. We have the comedians. The emperor is naked.
I'm totally in favor of
that. It's time to point.
Yeah. We have had the comedians all along.
And it doesn't work.
And look where things are headed.
They have not yet begun to mock.
And there was a good argument to be made that that the anger that drives the current right wing is a response to mockery. I mean, we are clearly not going to resolve this here, but I can no longer support the idea of unlimited tolerant response to
intolerance
to an intolerant movement. I can no longer support that.
Do you support hitting someone in the face?
I don't know. I am struggling with where the line should be, and I'm struggling with what exactly the form should be. Obviously, I started this by saying, you know, the Richard Spencer thing. By the way, he was punched twice that
yes,
day.
Yes, yes.
I think it's easy to say, wow, you look at that. It was just this guy. He's a jackass. And he riled some people up, and they took a swing at him. And it's easy to say that's probably not justified. The more difficult question is at the societal level and at the movement level, and how long do we have to sit back and watch that grow before we're ethically justified in doing more than talking?
When we know what's actually going to happen, a lot of movements like this don't add up to violence. We've had neo-Nazis for centuries that didn't go off and hurt people. Most of the KKK members out there are just people with an idea that would make their life magically better if only everybody thought the same way. And it's the furthest thing from their mind to be violent to somebody else.
Oh, wow. I think you are just totally wrong. You are just totally wrong. We are seeing an alliance between that attitude and the gotta get me a gun because I ain't a man unless I'm able to kill somebody that gets in my way attitude. Does that really happen,
or is that what you're afraid, and is that what the media's told you? It's going to happen, or it might happen. a lot of things might happen, but the good guys don't act until it actually starts happening.
That is a darn good point. And that is a darn good point.
Well, what does history tell us?
History tells us that when you persecute Nazis by yelling at them and throwing bottles at them, it gives them an excuse to form the SS.
Well,
that's what history
actually
says.
Hitler said that the only way they could have been stopped is if the forces that were against them had moved dramatically early on to just shut them down. And it was the tolerance of their society that allowed them to grow and get into places of power. That's what Hitler said.
He had an inside seat on that, so
maybe he was right.
Or
maybe he was lying because, I don't know. I don't know what his motive would have been.
No.
Anyway, so that is the show.
Wow.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. We will be back in 2 weeks. We have every reason to believe.
Yes.
We'll talk to you then.
All right.
Bye, everybody.
2 weeks on the 15th of February, and we, your glorious leaders, will be there. Until then, hold this message close to your hearts and raise your voices in chorus to I Am the Satellite by Brother Brian Stieksma.
Hey there, brother, don't you know the guy upstairs left us years ago? So there ain't no fate except the one you make, and there ain't no hell except the shit you take every day. So don't tell me life doesn't hurt and that you don't need the people, 'cause you've got your church. You gotta take your head out of the sky, because there ain't